In a relatively relaxed Tynwald, members appeared to be a little less argumentative than in recent sittings, perhaps the calm before the election run-in storm. Items discussed included a move to unify government's land and property portfolio, the state of the economy, and the National Insurance Fund, and the UK government's decision not to recommend the assisted dying bill for royal assent. As there was a small protest against the bill outside of Tynwald, that seems like a good place to start.
So I'm George Hargreaves. I'm a resident here on the Isle of Man. I live in Glenbyrn. Very concerned about this assisted dying bill that has been rejected by the UK Minister for Government and for the Isle of Man.
Well, it's not actually been rejected, has it? It's basically royal assent hasn't as yet been approved.
I'm not saying royal, but David Lammy has rejected it in its current form and says he cannot recommend it to the King. So you're correct, royal assent hasn't come, but it's been... And I don't know when that last happened. I've been in politics for 30 years, and I've never seen this happen. This is a disgrace to the Isle of Man House of Keys, to the Tynwald. The members were told time and time and time again, this is not safe. But tin-ear politics has ruled. And I believe that what we're seeing now as some double down on this, a bill that should be binned now. It's to the other things more important as this Parliament comes to an end. It should be binned. Let's move on. But a tin-eared politician will say, no, continue. We're not listening. There was never an electoral mandate for this. No, only about two people mentioned it in their manifesto. It's been taken by a politician that has his own agenda about this and is like a Pied Piper, led people astray. And
there's no harm, though, in having your own agenda. In fact, many people actually would say that a few more politicians with agendas mightn't be a bad thing.
Not a bad thing if you listen. There was a public consultation where more than 50% said, no, we're in a democracy. When that happens, you listen. But they didn't. Then time and time again, people have said, this is not safe. You're not listening. And I challenge every MHK that has supported this. Is this the political hill that you wish to die on? Because there's an election coming up. And there are people who are even in favour of assisted dying who look at the MHKs and say, why are you wasting time and energy on this thing? Leave it alone. Our kids, there's a campaign that I've just highlighted at Ballacameen School where the kids are talking about the brain drain and the lack of opportunities. What are we doing about that? Where are the speeches about that?
But there are also people whose loved ones have died in terribly tragic circumstances, and they are desperate for this legislation to be introduced.
Well, there are people like myself. My late wife died in my arms with cancer. I know what it's like to see a loved one die. And you can die with dignity, naturally, and there are lots of end-of-life cares that goes on that takes away pain and so forth. You know, it's bad law is made when you take extreme cases. And there has always been within the UK framework, and I know we're not in the UK, leeway in the law. The CPS decide what is going to be prosecuted and so forth. But to mandate this, to make this a law whereby somebody 12 months before, quote-unquote, they've been suggested they may die, can start putting this process. You only have to look at the television personality who's been pushing this in the UK. Heard her on Radio 4, and she's actually getting better. You know, the prognosis was wrong.
That was Esther Ransom.
Esther Ransom. The prognosis that she was going to die in this has been wrong, and she's been getting better. And this actually proves our point. This would be bad law, but I'm more interested on the democratic side of things. This has just not been democratically done. And it's now become a shibboleth, a biblical term, you know. I guarantee that every MHK that continues to push this will find themselves being campaigned against vigorously in this election. And they have to decide whether this is the thing that they want to end their career on, or whether they're going to start to do stuff that the people want. We want more jobs. We want the economy to be lifted up. We want movies, by the way. I want movies. We want to forget the past in that. And you know, we've got a big movie coming on the island. One swallow does not a summer make. We want to have a whole industry.
And you've sort of answered my final question, which is, obviously there was a protest this morning outside Tynwald that were 20 to 30 people there. Is this the sort of thing that we are going to expect to see more of?
I think if this goes forward, pride comes before fall. And if proudful, arrogant MHKs say, no, we're going to do this, whatever, they will find that people will rise up. People of good faith, people of no faith, will rise up and say, enough is enough. We want representation of the people, not representation of one-off ideas that have been stumbling and wasting our time. Had this got real credibility, it wouldn't have taken all this time. It hasn't. And let's just bin it. And only 30 people, because we only found out yesterday. Had we known before, like the other times, it would have been 100 people at least. Churches would have at least would have announced it on Sunday, would have come out. So this was a very quick turnaround. And we've got an election coming and we know the date.
That was assisted dying bill opponent George Hargreaves. Next, mover of the bill, Alex Allenson.
Yes, the idea was just to make sure that all Tynwald members knew my intention to look at some of the concerns expressed by the Ministry of Justice when they said that at this time they weren't happy to recommend for the assisted dying bill for royal assent and bring forward some amendments forward to try to achieve that. And I think that's a polite way of doing it. The emphasis the Chief Minister made quite clear is that as mover of the bill, it's down to me to do this. And so I take on that responsibility.
And, well, the first question is, what are the reasons that the UK is given for not granting royal assent at this stage?
I think there are a number of things that need to be cleared up. I haven't seen the correspondence from the Ministry of Justice that came straight to His Excellency, the Governor, and was shared with the Chief Minister as Head of Government. So I haven't seen the exact wording of that. What I do know is that previously their concerns were that some of the safeguards, codes of practice that we have in the bill were due to be determined by secondary legislation, and they've said that they would prefer it to be in primary legislation. There have been various talks in the UK by organised groups in England against the assisted dying, that they would bring cases to the European Court of Human Rights against our legislation, and they've said the same about the Jersey bill as well, which again is waiting for royal assent. And so I can't help but think that there is a degree of reticence in the Ministry of Justice that they might have to defend our bill in the European Court, and that's why they want this extra assurance, extra guarantees, so that it wouldn't be liable for legal challenge. I can absolutely respect that point of view. And what I need to do now is work with the Attorney General staff to draft the amendments that will satisfy that so we can move forward.
We've heard some members suggest that this is a constitutional crisis, and actually what you've just said there, that the UK would have to defend a piece of Isle of Man parliamentary legislation, that is a constitutional concern at the very least, surely.
I think there are always issues with our constitutional relationship with the United Kingdom. Similarly, Jersey and Guernsey have the same concerns. I do not think this is a crisis. It's very disappointing that it's taken over a year to get to this point. If I'd have been aware of their reticence to recommend for royal assent at an earlier stage, we'd have had more time to actually consult with them, consult with Tynwald members, and get the necessary amendments through before the end of this Tynwald. But we are where we are, and so my responsibility as mover of the bill is to go back to the drafters to try to strengthen some of the safeguards we have, make them far more obvious, do the work that we were going to do through secondary legislation, and present Tynwald a bill for approval that will meet the concerns of the Ministry of Justice and lead to royal assent being granted.
And how does that work? Because the bill has completed its passage through Keys and LegCo, so how do you get that this reopened? Is it a suspension of standing orders, or what's required to actually do this?
So there are this precedent in terms of the bill coming back to Tynwald with a series of amendments for approval. I'll be meeting with the presiding officers, both the President and the Speaker, to look at the parliamentary route for that. But before we do that, we need to make sure that we've got amendments that will meet the requirements of the Ministry of Justice and also will be accepted by Tynwald members. I hope they will. I hope all those people who supported the bill will continue to support the bill. And even those people who didn't necessarily support the bill will vote for extra measures which strengthen the safeguards that we've already debated at length in the past. Because at the end of the day, this is a bill that's taken around about 20 years to get to this point. We've had petitions on Tynwald Day. We've had committees. We've had extensive debate. And there is groundswell of opinion on the Isle of Man that people want the choice and option of assisted dying for those people with terminal illness who are facing an inevitable death.
There are, I think, 6, maybe 7 sittings left before... Of Keys, at least, before the House of Keys is dissolved in the summer. Something as important and as weighty as this, to be able to get amendments drafted even, and to Keys, even if you knew what the concerns were at this moment, to get all that done and to get it to Keys, and then to get it, presumably, if it goes through Keys, it will then have to go through LegCo. This is very, very tight timescales.
Again, I'm disappointed that we're doing it now rather than last year when Tynwald passed the bill. There's obviously been issues with the Ministry of Justice. They've had change in ministers. There's all sorts of things going on in England over the last year to occupy their times. But our constitutional arrangements with them are very important. And now it's my role to bring this through. You're quite right. There are 7 key sittings and 3 Tynwald sittings between now and the end of this parliamentary schedule. What the Chief Minister has said before Christmas was that with the amount of legislation coming through, we would almost certainly have extra sittings, and quite rightly so to make sure that we finish the work we started. And so I think there is time to present amendments, not in a rushed way, but in a measured way, that will strengthen the safeguards, the existing safeguards in the Assisted Dying Bill, and will lead to royal assent, so we can start the extensive further implementation plans, which will take time through consultation and further legislation.
The delays in the parliamentary process, you have a set period of at least 2 weeks, for example, between second reading and clauses being considered. That is so members can spend time thinking about these things. I can't see how, if there are only 7 sittings, how you are going to allow members to have that thinking time which is necessary on something so important as this. I mean, we are talking life and death. Is it really possible to fit all this in?
So assisted dying isn't about life and or death. Assisted dying is about death and how people have the choice as to how and where they die when they're facing death in the face. And it's very important that we get the right legislation for our island. We do have the right legislation for Ireland. It's gone through significant debate, possibly more than any other bill that's been brought forward. But the Ministry of Justice have decided that they would like those safeguards that we have strengthened and brought into primary legislation. So these are technical aspects of work that was to be done in the future, is now being done now. And it's my responsibility to bring those through the democratic process in the right way, not rushed, but measured, and convince honourable members that this is the right way forward for our nation. And that's what I will try absolutely to do between now and the dissolution of Tynwald.
And, of course, if you fail to do that, effectively, the bill falls.
You're quite right. If the bill doesn't get signed by Tynwald members, it will fall at the end of this administration, and I will have failed to uphold the wishes of the people who've been campaigning for over 20 years on our island to get dignity and choice and autonomy for people with terminal illness facing an inevitable death. And I will have to wear that on my shoulders. But my job between now and the end of this Tynwald is to do as much as possible to make sure that the law we passed last year, a law that we started over 3 years ago, does get onto the statute books and does allow those people on the Isle of Man who want an assisted death to have that.
And I suppose it only becomes a constitutional crisis if the bill does become fully compliant with the necessary human rights legislation, and at that stage the UK government refuses to pass the bill to the King for royal assent.
We are not in a constitutional crisis. I don't think we will develop a constitutional crisis on this aspect. But it's absolutely right that we have the right conversations and the right liaison with the Ministry of Justice to make sure that the laws we pass in Tynwald are the laws that are actually announced on Tynwald Hill. It won't be this year, but hopefully next.
That was Ramsey MHK Alex Allenson. Next, Julie Edge.
You had an urgent question down in Tynwald. What was that about?
So it was in connection with the assisted dying bill, which 2023, which hasn't received royal assent, and basically just really an opportunity for members to ask the Chief Minister any questions that they wish to ask. And really the concern that had come to me from a lot of the public was, is it a constitutional crisis? And there seems to be two camps. Some say it is, some say it isn't. So I thought, well, let's see if we can have an urgent question, get a statement, and then we might get some answers.
And what did you think about the answers that you received?
I think they were fair. The statement from the Chief Minister, you know, he laid out any of the communications that had been with the UK, when he received it and how he informed the private member's bill mover, Dr. Allenson. And he also talked about when the Minister for Health did give some answers about the safeguard and coercion and the contract for practice. And, you know, that was really helpful because it does clarify again, because it's been some time since we've actually discussed this. You know, I thought his answers were helpful. I was surprised to hear a member stand up and say about it's a constitutional issue, because it's certainly not, it wasn't my understanding, and I said it's a constitutional embarrassment that we've had a piece of legislation which is so significant to get right, and obviously clearly the UK had concerns, and it's the European Court of Human Rights that not everybody realises what the Isle of Man's commitment is to that.
You had other questions. You asked a question in relation to the National Insurance Fund. What was your concern over that?
So my concern was there'd been a Public Accounts Committee hearing with the Treasury, and the head of the National Insurance said, you know, that the date for the fund is diminishing faster and the date's coming forward. So I thought, this really does keep concerning me, because we do go through these peaks and troughs with the fund depending on investments and risks. But also it's actually that we've given additional funding to the NHS this year, and then the NHS are not being financially stringent in the management of the money that we're already giving them. So it did concern me. So I wanted to be able to bring that out. Because Manx Care, again, we've heard today, they're going to be overspent by over 15 million. And I'm sorry, the island cannot continue to allow accountable officers to just continuously do this and ask for more. I didn't get an answer as to where the more's really going to come from. So,
and I mean, you had several other questions, but one, the question which certainly the minister was delighted that you'd ask, was in relation to bed capacity, and the minister for health and social care, Claire Christian, thanked you for asking the question, and were you happy with the answers that you got?
I've actually been asking about bed capacity at Nobles for a couple of years. I've got numerous written answers. And, you know, I've got the original plan and opening for Nobles Hospital. And we had over 300 beds and we're down to something like 170, 180. That's what's wrong at Nobles Hospital. That's all that's wrong in A&E. There's nowhere to put the patients that need to go to a ward. However, they are trying to fix it. But didn't Manx Care see this coming? No, she said the first business case, I think it went to Treasury, was July last year. When you look at the actual numbers and of patients going through A&E, there's not a significant increase. The significant increases are when they've closed Ramsey Cottage Hospital and its emergency area and that. So I will always challenge statistics and I will look at them carefully. And we had over 300 beds. I think it was over 350 beds when we opened. We're down to virtually half. That's what the problem is. I hear things said about ageing population, that it's nothing to do with accident and emergency means you've had an accident and you're in emergency and you might need a bed. It's as simple as that. The minister is, you know, fair dues, she's trying to commit to additional 12 beds. I'm keen to hear where that space is coming from. I'm not sure it's going to be a bed. It might be a reclining chair somewhere, but you know, she's committed to come back and advise where that will be. But more alarming really was the failure rate for hitting that 4-hour target. That's because there's a backlog, isn't it? It's clear that it's, you can't get through, you can get through the door, but you can't get anywhere else. So therefore it's causing all this bed back block is basically what it is, because they can't move the patients on. As she said, the staff are working amazingly up there, and majority of people that go through there say that, but you know, they've got to be given the right space to be able to operate, and I think the closure of Ramsey and Martin Ward has been a significant impact on that.
And that is a temporary closure, isn't it?
It's a temporary closure, but again, it seems to be purely a maintenance matter. Who was keeping their eye on that to make sure that maintenance matter didn't happen? And then it's significant cost to everybody, and including the people of the island, when they can't then get into A&E and get a bed in A&E because they've had to take capacity in Nobles. To me, it's strategic, lack of strategic planning and foresight of what's required.
That was Onken MHK Julie Edge. Next, the Treasury Minister, who has created a new nickname for himself.
Fleet of foot, Thomas. Is that the way I should introduce you?
Oh, thank you for that. Once doubting, still doubting, but fleet of foot as well now.
Well, that's good to hear. It is fair to say that, well, you had some questions to answer. We'll start with the questions. You had a question in relation to the National Insurance Fund. Should we be concerned at the general direction in which the National Insurance Fund is travelling? I mean, your predecessor in Treasury had made some attempts to try and convince Tynwald members that maybe we need to look again at the triple lock, for example.
He made attempts that way. Secondly, he wanted to put in place a policy about reducing the amount of money we needed in the National Insurance Fund, which I resisted. So where we are is that today, as part of the answer to the question, I announced that the next five-year review would complete in 2027, effectively bringing it forward by a year, because there are important questions to answer about the National Insurance Fund, which is a bedrock asset for state pensions and social security, and also substantial contribution to the National Health Service here. So, you know, we'll be able to specify our questions, and we'll be able to get actuaries to look at it sooner than they would otherwise have done.
And in terms of that, I suppose, relatively early on in the next administration, they will get that information and they can make some decisions if they choose to do so, if they feel the need.
Exactly, and that's why I brought it forward. I also explained a bit more about what had happened previously, 3 decades ago, with the National Insurance Fund being used for the hospital, £44 million. I essentially said that we changed the law since then to make it absolutely clear about how Tim Wood was involved in that process. And I actually also explained how the COVID drawdown from the National Insurance Fund was actually linked to National Insurance Fund use. So it's a precious asset. It's something we have that the Great Britain and Northern Ireland don't have to the same extent that we have. And I see it as an important part of the future of state pensions and social security. And if I'm the Treasury Minister that specifies the terms of reference before I stop being Treasury Minister this at dissolution, that would be great. But certainly we're trying to set it up so that the next administration, the next House of Keys, has full information about the prognosis and options in respect of the use of the National Insurance Fund and the future of state pensions and social security.
But the important thing, at least in the short term, is that there is no immediate threat to the National Insurance Fund. It's more, if steps were taken now, the longer term security of the fund would be guaranteed. But there's no, it's not an urgent need, would you say, to take action?
It is an urgent need, and that's a really penetrating question that you've asked. And I just want to say something that I don't hear said enough, which is that, you know, state pensions would come from general revenue, National Insurance Fund in the absolute worst case. Social Security needs to be paid because it's it provides a floor and makes sure people that we're a caring society. So what we're saying is that when we looked at increasing the NHS allocation a couple of years ago, the actuaries did work which showed that the consequence of the higher amounts of state pension being paid out were that the fund had come to a drawdown position earlier than had previously been actuarially stated. So that's another thing in the background for why we've decided to bring this forward, this actuarial review.
So then I think there were a few other questions. A number of the questions related to your second item on the Tynwald Order paper. You had a statement, which was the first item. The second item, though, was in relation to establishing a new board of Tynwald, which effectively will manage the, if established, will manage the property and land holdings of Isle of Man government agencies.
Well, let's just change one word in what you said. It'll clearly own the land holdings, but there are all sorts of other factors involved. So the direction is towards ownership by this body, and we agree, and that would be achieved through a transfer of functions order that would come back to Tynwald for approval. And Mr. Speaker, Jim Watterson moved an amendment successfully to put a lot more detail behind the proposal when that transfer of functions order comes back to Tynwald. Management is different. We have a tiered structure, so it's not about centralising everything. It's about localising and keeping local what's necessary to be local, and it differs depending on the type of the type of asset. But essentially, if people are trying to manage leases and maintain property off the side of their desks doing something else, that's not ideal. So that should be done professionally by somebody who has that as their professional skill set, and they should leave them, you know, which create the space for them to do what their own professional skill set is better. If it's an incredibly specialist property role, obviously it needs to be done by those specialists locally. So we've tried to capture what's good in the approach from centralisation and what's good in the approach from localisation, and it will depend. It wasn't a centralisation that was put forward today. It was property ownership all being in one place and then rational, optimal decisions made about things thereafter.
It possibly then that what you're saying it introduces an additional layer of confusion then, because if you're effectively transferring the ownership away from a department, but that department continues to manage the property,
can do.
That I don't quite see what the point of transferring one and not the other, because the same argument would apply to managing property as would apply to managing the legal situation in relation to ownership of a property.
Yeah, and these are things to be sorted and determined by those who really know, with political oversight in Tim Wood and in government, in the next few years, in a phased process. Ultimately, even things like project management and use of capital should be included in this process. Eventually, the registration of land should probably be speeded up. Certainly, maintenance and getting the right resources to keep properties maintained and properties sold or purchased where necessary to do that should all come into it. But what I wanted to make out today is that we're not changing things that people from the south seem to be worried about around covenants and common land and all of those sorts of things. That's not changing, that's all intact. I was also, we're not determined as yet on exactly how this board would operate. I heard some people make cases for more political involvement, some other people make cases for less political involvement and more non-executive director involvement. Look, we've started a process, that process will carry on. Achieved a lot today. Delighted that it was nearly unanimous. There was just one member who voted against, but the process continues.
11 million benefits to the Manx economy. How does that work?
So that's 1% of the total, roughly 1% of the total value of the assets, which is standard claim by asset managers. So it's scientific in that sense. That's how it's derived, but it still needs to be evaluated in this process. And I could have laid that down very clearly in my summing up remarks, but I've chosen to keep it for the next report that we'll lay before Tim Wood when they need to make the real decision in terms of the transfer of function. And then we've also got estimates for the costs and the benefits, which we'll also lay down very clearly rather than extending the debate today. Just presenting all the information. We had all the information in an earlier version of the report, and we were encouraged to slim it down to make the choice simple. We've chosen a choice to be made today. We got further than was got in the 2009 Council Ministers Subcommittee on this topic. We got further than the 2018 government did when they took this step, and I hope to continue the momentum to make actual progress so that people see the benefit of efficiencies, but also better property management and better maintenance of properties and a slimmed down government estate in the future as soon as possible.
So using a planning analogy, effectively what you've gone for today is approval in principle, and then you're coming back with the more detailed scheme at a later stage, which is quite a novel approach, actually asking Tynwald whether they generally think it's a good idea before coming up with the detail.
Yeah, but we've gone slightly further because reports have been received in the past, and then in 2018 the principle seemed to be accepted as part of a select committee debate. But yeah, we've gone further, we've agreed the principle. Lots of valuable points were made, some of them were contradictory, but we've got to now come to a professionally informed, publicly engaged outcome which can take to Tim Wood for final approval. It's legally sound. We could do it with a bill, like happened with the creation of Manx Care. We're not going to do it with a bill, we don't think. We're going to do it with a transfer of functions order. That transfer of functions order could come back in months if we can take members with us so that they'll vote for it. But certainly the momentum's got to be maintained, because this is an efficiency programme, and an incredibly valuable efficiency programme, and also nobody looking around the public estate and the infrastructure we have in the island can say it's in a good place. We need to be able to spend more money on it, and we need to be able to have mechanisms to make sure that we spend the money optimally in the right place, and also then we maintain what we spent money on.
So it could come back before the recess, effectively. It could be that this decision could be taken by July, Tynwald.
That's my intention.
So then we move back on the order paper and to your statement about the economic situation, which was compared by some members to what the Chief Minister's already said. And there was a general suggestion that there was very little new in it. Is that a fair assessment from those members?
Well, they didn't say it very fairly. They said it in a political way, but We gave an update to Timwell members, and the reality is we meet weekly. We are very well prepared for the situation to deteriorate. We've looked out all of the plans, improved them for if the situation deteriorates. But we are in the summer where heating houses is not as necessary for nearly everybody as it is in the winter. We're in a situation where the actual fuel price for vehicles isn't actually as high as it was in 2022, and we're in a situation where this could go on for a long time. The situation itself in the Middle East is not yet certain, and what the impact will be and how it will play out is not yet certain. So we're behaving responsibly from a fiscal perspective as well as from a social perspective, and that's what I was laying out today very clearly. We're prepared. We've got industry liaison. We've got charitable liaison. I agreed to go and make sure that local authorities were working with us more as well. I've got no reason to believe that they're not, and we've had some initial contact, but that's what it was. I gave a statement as promised. It wasn't the most exciting statement I've ever made, but it absolutely captured where we are, which is well prepared.
And I suppose what Isle of Man government is saying, and you correct me if I'm misinterpreting this, yes, we recognise that things aren't wonderful at the moment, but they're probably not quite bad enough for us to leap into action with new schemes and new proposals to help people.
Yeah, well, thank you for capturing that part of it. That's an important part of it. But the main point was denied by some of the people there, and they tended to be the ones who voted against the budget, because the main point was that we had a very good budget, in the sense that many people have £1,000 extra in their pockets because of the personal tax allowance rise, which came in from 1st of April, and that is greater than the average household extra expense in terms of heating their house and running their car. Obviously, these are all averages and every family matters, and I wanted to make sure that reach out and there are structures there. But basically, that's a very good economic response to the situation, puts more money in people's pockets. And secondly, we've had an anti-poverty strategy running for a great number of years, and I laid out some of the aspects of that, like emergency loans, like the winter bonus scheme, like the fact that we can work with charities, and we're having charity meetings, which are all described in that poverty report, which we released today. I think I was the minister most heavily involved in that as the chair of the social committee, and we chose deliberately to release it today. So I linked it. So I suppose it's in thirds. We're prepared for a worse situation, but hoping for the best. Secondly, we've got we've got a tax strategy and an economic strategy that should help people. And thirdly, we do have anti-poverty measures, and ours is a caring society, and make sure we all look out for each other.
That was Douglas Central MHK Chris Thomas. Jason Moorhouse is not yet convinced by government's move to create a unified government estate.
I feel there's a need to actually reform this area, but in terms of what we're being offered, it's just more complication, more cost, and potentially more confusion. So ultimately, I got to say no.
And the speaker gave an amendment to the motion, which basically required far more detail in terms of costs and staffing and how the whole thing was going to work. That didn't convince you?
No, and really the main thing about his amendment was that disconnect between everything shifting kind of at all levels to a more managed shift. And I just thought, even with that, there's so many unanswered questions. And you always get the problem with an amendment, especially so close to the end of a term, in how it will actually be playing out and how it will actually come back to the next administration. So I just felt it was probably best just to say, we'll pause this and then see what happens in 6 months' time.
Minister Thomas is keen to press on with this. He's suggesting that they could be back before the end of this administration, by July Tynwald, with a plan.
Yeah, that will be very interesting in terms of how the plan links to what he said and how it pulls together the more moderate thoughts of Mr. Speaker. So, you know, there's still the possibility I will go with this. You know, there is a need to actually reform the way properties managed within the government, but at the same time I was concerned about how this kind of value of 1.3 billion kept being a recurring theme of the minister and the political memory. It started to make me think, is this a way to bundle up all the property and then get easy access to a loan? It's, you know, something that we don't need to do, and it did concern me.
I mean, it's been suggested this before, hasn't it? I mean, there have been various different proposals at different times to try and unify the public estate in the same way, I suppose, as there has been for a unified single entity Isle of Man government. Why is it that previous attempts have failed, and why do you think it's so difficult to get this particular issue right?
I think it really goes back to the operations of two areas. If you've got the operations within the department and the operations within this case in terms of the property, it's very difficult to get both groups seen from the same hymn sheet and wanting the same thing. And we saw the example yesterday morning of us having a boat too big for the parking area, and that's the problem. We actually get too much division, too much splitting. So that was kind of at the forefront of my mind all yesterday, in terms of we need to have something that fits more naturally in terms of the structure we've got, rather than creating an additional layer, an additional cost.
And of course, previous centralisation attempts, and on the one hand, it is what seems to be being proposed, but Minister Thomas was trying to distance himself from the whole idea that this was in any way centralisation. But previous attempts at centralisation, particularly the shared services move, which basically means that the DOI is responsible for maintaining everyone's infrastructure. There was a certain amount of strategic thinking in bringing everything together under one umbrella, ideally to save duplication of effort. But the primary reason, I mean, I know because I was in the council ministers at the time, was to save £2 million, and that's never really caught up since that decision was taken, has it?
That's it. In a way, they're actually saying we'd be spending money this time, so they were more real. But at the same time, have they actually got a budget sufficiently large to cover their great aspirations? Because really, the budget was just covering the staffing. And as we know, that staffing within government tends to grow exponentially. And that was another concern that several of us looked at and were, you know, really worried about going forward.
And, of course, one of the issues with this is that we know that government doesn't really know what it owns in certain areas. I mean, particularly, I know you and I, through your role as a constituent MHK, my role as a clerk to the commissioners, have had a few occasions now where we have been told by DOI that this is a landowner's responsibility, when in fact it would appear, at least, that it was the DOI's land and they just didn't realise it was theirs.
Well, that's it. And you've also got the issue in terms of registering the land, that so much government property is still not being registered with the land registry. You think, you know, after so many years, this is something that should be done. And, you know, there is a target to achieve it, but, you know, first things first in some respect. And that does need to be sorted before this agency, this board, actually has got the mindset to go forward and the clarity to go forward. So I do think that we were rushing slightly, and it'd be interesting to see what Minister Thomas does come back with in July.
Another minor item in the overall scheme of things, I suppose, but probably not so minor, was your report, the Economic Scrutiny Committee's report in relation to, and the specific issue was in relation to the scale of government. There was a suggestion in the debate last month that you had been somewhat creative in going from a relatively limited amount of fact to creating this suggestion that that government was growing too big and it was all undermining the private sector, and members felt there needed to be more evidence for this. Rob Mercer offered an olive branch. You weren't so keen to accept that.
It was basically a process that worked relatively well in terms of a member of the Legislative Council approached the chairman of a committee and said, I've got this idea going forward to solve this problem. The idea had two elements to it. The first one was quite palatable in terms of this recognition that the government is a large body, and it is kind of having that issue continuing in terms of the impact on the private sector. But the second part was less palatable in terms of he was wanting to actually look at the actual process and the evidence and to get deep into the questioning of this process, whereas we felt we'd done that whilst preparing the report, and we felt it was a time to actually go back to the previous system. We were actually looking at the size of the private sector, the requirements of the private sector, and ensuring that the government wasn't becoming too absorptive in terms of taking on too many employees and creating a real issue within the key economy.
That was Arbury, Castletown and Malou MHK, Jason Moorhouse. Finally, the Cabinet Office Minister on today's census.
You are very keen for people across the Isle of Man to understand that the census is coming up. So when is that?
So census night is now fast approaching. It is this coming Sunday, the 26th of April. People may already be starting to receive the forms. I received mine through the post yesterday to allow people to go online on census day, complete it, and actually get their information done early.
And if you don't have the ability to go online, maybe people who haven't got computers or just aren't confident enough to do that, how do they go about filling in the census?
So one of the things we've been very aware to, and you shouldn't be surprised with me as Minister, since I've raised it into all myself many times, is there are people who aren't digitally enabled. So one of the things we've made certain is that from the 27th onward, there were multiple routes that people can actually complete the census. So people can do it over the phone, people will be able to get paper copies, people will be able to seek assistance as well in completing it. So there is multiple ways. The important thing is that people engage and actually get that information in, because the information that we gain from the census decides the services and the provision of things provided to the people of the island. It is absolutely crucial information.
You mentioned there from the 27th.
Yes, so that is the day after census night. So the day after census night, the other routes open up for people to be able to complete. But obviously the information we want is from the 26th.
And why does this matter? You know, what is it that Isle of Man government gets out of a census?
So that's a very good question. It is absolutely fundamental information. It's not just Isle of Man government either. It's organisations out in our community, including businesses as well. It allows us to gauge the population and various strands of population, the makeup of households, the age range of the population, the complete demographics, basically, of our island and our society. And with that information, we are then able to plan not just services today, but also look and predict with accuracy, general accuracy, where we believe services will be required in not just the next 5 years, the next 10 years, the next 15 years. And we can also see what changes have happened since the last full census, which was in 2021. And that gives us an indication of, do we need to tweak things? Are there things that need to change? Is there new things that need to be provided? And I know out in the business community, they also use it in terms of their services and their businesses to dictate demand and what they believe will be required over the next few years.
With all the information that government now holds electronically about everybody, pretty much everybody living on the Isle of Man, is it getting to be a kind of a thing of the past? The census is AI and its ability to search all your electronic records, is that going to make census less important, do you think?
I think we're a long way from that with AI. AI itself can get very confused sometimes and double count. It's much better to have the proper human interaction process. The census by no means is out of date. It is still one of the most valuable statistical tools that we actually have. And this interim census at the 5 year point since the last full census to the next full census is just as important. It provides clear information in one place to give and is statistically reliable. If you start collating information from various government departments, it can be a very manual process. It can be very much a cross-checking process, because you've got to make sure that you're not double counting individuals or looking at individuals in the wrong way in the makeup of households. This is a very clear process. It is an easy process for people to engage with and an easy process to get accurate statistics from.
And to a fashion, I suppose the census acts as a sort of a calibration to say, actually, all these other statistics that we've got, we've got the census here and we can proof check that.
It does. I mean, I'll give an example from my time as Minister for Health and Social Care, where actually the number of people on doctors' lists was actually higher than the population, which clearly shows there is an issue there with lists either duplicating or not being cleaned down. And so we undertook an exercise to go through the doctors' lists and try and actually get them reproportioned so they're more accurate. So the census actually feeds through lots of other organisations as well and different data sets, and it can expose frail and other data sets as well. But the crucial thing is that people engage, because every single person counts when it comes to the census.
Douglas North MHK David Ashford there. So, what do you think? Is it time for government to rationalise its land and property ownership? Are you surprised they even have to ask? And did Keys and Legco members do their job properly in relation to the assisted dying bill? Are you happy for important safeguarding amendments to the bill to be rushed through in the dying embers of this House of Keys? I'm Phil Gorn, Goramayos and Geisha Grum. Thanks for listening.